The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
Brentford's UK garage smash and grab at the Etihad. Cottage pie for our sins. The most comprehensive post-defeat fronting up in Premier League history. Peter Drury's quadruple alliteration. Confused baby-related goal celebrations. World Cup snubbings. Squad announcement graphic layout woes. A definitive exploration of footballing huffing and puffing. And Jonathan Pearce digs deep for a new variation on the top at Christmas concept. Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 208 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me are my A team. First of all, Charlie Eccleshare, how's it going?
Very well, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Manchester and Dublin this week as the Football Clichés live tour rolls on. Excited?
I really am. I'm really, really looking forward to it. It's sort of the closest approximation I'll ever have to like a rock star lifestyle. So yeah. Train up rather than a private jet, but we can but dream.
Yeah, just been finalising our rider for the Dublin show. Yes. And I just couldn't bring myself to be any more showbiz than saying, just a couple of beers would be fine. Thanks very much. See you later. Bye.
Couple of sandwiches, maybe, if that's like, that's not too much trouble. I don't know. Tesco's fine.
I haven't got the mentality for it at all. But David Walker's ego perhaps big enough. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm very good. Yeah.
Looking forward to politely applauding Guardian Football Weekly as they pick up their Podcast of the Year award tonight as we record.
Yeah. An experience I'm very familiar with over the years. I think this will be the sixth or seventh time I've watched them go up there and collect it. I'm sure Max is primed and ready for the live FaceTime from down under. With a half cut Barry Glendening on stage.
There's a prediction.
And we wouldn't have him any other way.
No, it's almost FSA awards tradition, and that's fine. We don't want to step on anybody's toes. We've got a lovely little tidily formed adjudication panel for everyone tonight. First of all, this is from Dan Keyville. It is quite simply Sam Matterface doing Sam Matterface things.
Just give everything to try and break down Brentford, who basically been so solid at the back.
Brentford are the so solid crew, but there's more than 21 seconds to go.
For fuck's sake.
Stop that, Sam. Matterface.
I don't know. It just feels right at the centre of the Matterface universe, Dave. So solid crew reference.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He couldn't resist. Couldn't help himself there. I don't know if we'd let the clip play on whether we would have heard Mickey Gray chime in with a bit of the rap or his own reference, or did it just go straight over his head?
Maybe. Elsewhere at the weekend, other curiosities included, Charlie, rugby league at the Emirates. That feels massively incongruous.
I was saying this yesterday. It looked, I think there's rugby league at Arsenal on the Saturday and then rugby union at Spurs on the Sunday. And there's something very particular about seeing stadia that you're very familiar with, and a different sport. It just feels, I don't know, there's something so subtly weird and wrong about it.
Yeah. And I'm not going particularly big picture here, Dave. I'm not saying there's some sort of class divide that suggests that rugby league shouldn't be played at the home of red wine and whinging, the Emirates. But it just in a pure sporting sense, it just felt very jarring.
It is quite incongruous, isn't it? So this was for the World Cup, right? It was for the Rugby League World Cup.
Yeah, the semi-final.
Yeah. It does have a peculiar relationship with London. You know, obviously a very, very northern sport, even very particular parts of the north as well. And yet it has this long tradition of like the Wembley final.
That's true, yeah. And Challenge Cup, yeah.
And that sort of thing, which is a little bit strange. But I'm more in favour of rugby league at football stadiums than I am union. Just, I don't know why. It's a bit of a Michael Cox-esque irrational hatred of rugby, to be honest.
Rugby league's got a really football-y vibe. It's almost at the same sort of tempo, I think, which maybe does lend itself. Yeah, yeah. The crowd can kind of engage with it in exactly the same way. Rugby union, different type of chanting.
Some good overlap as well, places like Wigan that I only know from rugby league and football. They kind of seem to coexist quite happily. But also, Dave, you said like very specific parts of the north. That is true. I mean, places like Widnes, I only know from rugby league. I just can't imagine that in a non-rugby league context.
Widnes is just pro Evo Wigan, isn't it?
the Widnes blue and white.
We've lost large swathes of the northwest ahead of our trip to Manchester already. Anyway, this is one
ahead of our trip to Widnes.
I really enjoyed this tweet from Chris, who said, an interesting take on For My Sins, as my partner tells me what we're having for dinner later. She texted him, I'm afraid we have leftover cottage pie for our sins. Dave, this is far too small a matter for my sins.
Does she know? Does this person know about us? Is this a genuine in the wild for our sins?
Couldn't rule it out.
The sense I got was that it was a genuine one. It wasn't a knowing for my sins.
That would make more sense. But then there's another kind of Occam's razor explanation for this from podcast regular Nick Miller, who implied it could simply have been an autocorrect situation, Charlie. She simply wanted to say for our dins.
For our
dins. Right next to each other on a keyboard.
Yeah I know.
That makes sense. Why would you say it otherwise?
I don't know. Is there a food stuff or a meal? I mean, would you say that we're having pizza for our sins? Because pizza's quite indulgent and sort of
That's
quite heavy.
Angle. Yeah, it's the only angle you can go for. Unless you're going like proper sort of to town. I don't know, Bob Ricard on a Monday night or something. That would be very for our sins.
A window into your world there.
Yeah, well, anyway, good to know that we're living rent-free in the operating systems of smartphones. anyway, right, always enjoy a Premier League soundtrack of booing on a winter's late afternoon. But this was great. This is Everton fans booing off their team at Bournemouth, but conspicuous mainly for its isolated enunciations of booing. This is great.
Wow. That
not
last
just,
one.
Not just, Charlie, the isolated, you know, single acts of booing, which is always a fascination of mine, but they weren't even kind of boos. They were just the word boo, which I think is the most fascinating example I've ever heard.
I can see where they're going, though, because sometimes it doesn't quite convey, you know, it's not a spitting noise. It's quite drawn out, and that can seem sometimes unsatisfying. So I think they're trying to circumvent that with a sort of more spitting staccato boo.
Yeah.
The guy who was booing there, he's done something that you would think that's actually sort of impossible. The word boo, he still managed to say it in a Scouse accent.
Yeah. It's incredible that, isn't it? Never heard boo. Like, boo is normally immune to accents almost.
Yeah.
And
accent proof.
Not really booming enough either for, you know, to perform the function of a boo either.
Yeah. So it's like a boo. Very, boo. Very strange.
Just boo. Just a very neutral boo. got to work harder on that if you're an Everton fan, surely.
And they get a lot of practice.
Yeah.
Exactly. They really are the kings of the booers.
On the other side of the divide here amongst the players, there really could only have been one man to do the post-Bournemouth defeat fronting up. Mm. And it was Connor Cody, whose mid-range earnestness we have noted on this podcast before. But here he is, all 2 minutes of Connor Cody after the Bournemouth defeat, edging ahead of Harry Maguire in the fronting up rankings.
Nowhere near good enough. It was nothing that represents an Everton team, represents Everton Football Club, represents our supporters. Nothing. So long, hard look in the mirror for every single one of us who plays for this football club, because it was nowhere near good enough. Personal pride, standards that we set every single day in training. We have to set standards every day in training. It's not just about today. It can't be anything to do with the manager, his staff. It's nothing to do with that. It's up to us as players to set standards and have personal pride in what we do every single day. We don't have that at the minute. So we need to look at ourselves long and hard in the mirror, because it was shocking. It was nowhere near good enough from our point of view. So I've had a long talk in the dressing room in terms of what's going on and what needs to be done, and we need to look at ourselves. So nothing to do with the manager, nothing to do with the staff. It's up to us as players to look at ourselves in the mirror every single day and give the best of ourselves every single day. Again, I go back to every single day. It's not just about today. It's about every single day in training, making sure we're giving the best of ourselves. And at the minute, can we say we're doing that? I don't really know, but do we have to start doing it? Of course we do, and quickly. Massively short, because this is Everton. We just said in there, like, at the minute it's too easy to play for Everton Football Club. This is Everton. Everton Football Club, who over the years has fought for Europe and been in cups and done all these sorts of things, and this is Everton, and we're not representing that at the minute as a team, as a club, for the supporters. We're not representing that. So like I said, there's a lot of looking at ourselves. I don't know what it is, but we need to look at ourselves and quit, because we don't want that. We need to make sure we're not doing that for them supporters who are travelling every single day to travel to watch us play down in Bournemouth, wherever they're going, Newcastle, wherever that may be. So we need to make sure we're not there. So it's something we look at today, and we've got a lot of learning to do quickly. Listen, the World Cup, really, everyone's been excited, but I'm looking at today. I'm looking at today. It's as simple as that. I don't look at anything else other than today. And today, for me, it'll take a lot of time to get over, if I'm being honest, because that feeling out on that pitch at the end of the game was horrendous. I'll be honest with you, it was absolutely horrendous to see lads going over to supporters and supporting. It's horrendous. You don't want to feel that as a team, and we need the supporters behind us, but how can we expect them to be behind us when we're doing that? We can't. So listen, a lot of learning, a lot of going back to the drawing board and looking what we can do and improve, and we'll do that as quickly as possible.
Charlie, wow. It is physically impossible to front up more than that. Physically,
yeah.
Impossible.
Yeah, I don't think you can do it. There were so many. I mean, I don't know if you've crunched the numbers, but there are some. I mean, there's some extraordinary data in there. I would have thought. What I one of my favourite bits about it is the whole "this is Everton" thing, because that is exactly how I think of Everton over the last sort of 5 or 10 years. That they'll go and lose that kind of game and then complain about the fact that that's not what they're about. But it's been what they've been about for so long. Like, at what point is that not Everton?
This is the existential problem of being Everton, Dave. I mean, they are essentially, the doldrum threshold for Everton is so wide that they are essentially always in the doldrums. And they rightly have pride in their existence. So those two things combined mean that you're always going to have, yeah, we're Everton. We should be doing better.
Yeah,
absolutely. No, I think Charlie's completely spot on. But the way you've edited there, like you've edited out the questions, and it went on so long. It's almost like he's talking to himself. He's just in the room on his own. Just, We're Everton. We've got to look in the mirror.
So I've crunched the data, as Charlie suggested. I think I've got this right. I mean, there's an awful lot going on in there. I mean, the day-to-day training ground stuff, which we haven't touched on yet.
Mirrors, lots of mirrors.
Yeah, I counted 4 football clubs, plus another 2 or 3, pointed Evertons, which is more or less an Everton football club, really. Mm. 3 acts of looking in the mirror, be it long, hard, or otherwise. so there's a lot, and then there's a long talk as well. Yeah, talk to ourselves, drawing board as well, right at the end. That's a shitload of fronting up, post-fronting up activity to be done, Charlie.
Yeah, I half expected him to say that we had a long, hard talk in there, which I think if ever there was a time, I've never heard that before, but I imagine if you were ever going to have a long, hard talk,
yeah, a lot was said, but that'll stay in there. That'll stay between us. A lot was said.
A lot of home truths were delivered, but they had to be.
A lot of this football club.
You know, we're not here to make friends. Yeah, extraordinary. All the stuff about learning as well was a big thing. And that it wasn't just about today was a kind of key message, I would say, from that.
Get the vision of, like, from what he was so banging on so much about mirrors there, of, like, the whole Everton dressing room all sitting in, in like a showbiz dressing room.
All
individually staring at themselves in the mirror.
All the way around. Well, they
just get installed at Finch Farm, these, like, massive mirrors for them to just sit at in the dressing room. No stone was left unturned. How Everton turned their season around.
Yeah. I know it sounds like we're kind of picking fun at this, and we are to an extent. I am, as ever, fascinated by the patterns that emerge in all of this, but I thought it was a incredibly saturated example of this phenomenon, Dave. But above all of this is the fact that this sort of messaging does work. Fans are, to a certain extent, placated by this. You're a Watford fan. You've heard this before.
Mm, definitely. William Troost-Ekong has done this sort of thing a couple of times, also centre-half. Both of the last Championship seasons, there's been a point of absolute dismal performance, fans getting on the team's back, and both times he has been said to have got the boys together before a crucial match, and just the players, not the staff.
I mean, it's almost a preemptive strike, isn't it? Because you can't criticise Everton any more or the players than what Cody's just done. So it does sort of leave you nowhere to go. When the fronting up is done to that extent, what more can you really ask for?
Brutal honesty there from Connor Cody. On a lighter note, at St James's Park this weekend was Peter Drury.
Wonderful Willock wallop. Gallagher's euphoria.
Two things to address here, Charlie. First of all, one wonderful Willock wallop is an alliteration too far for me, even for Drury.
Yeah, well, it's 4 for a start. Normally you group those in 3. If you're counting the sort of oral version.
Yeah,
exactly, even if it's not. It brings back memories, actually, of that Paul Scholes "just to enjoy," which is one of my favourite Drury commentaries. Yeah, that's... That is something. As you've said before, Adam, the alliteration is like a forward sort of sorting out their feet in the penalty box and getting shot away. It is amazing how he does that.
That leads me on to my second point, Dave, because a lot of what Drury does is tailored to the moment, tailored to the circumstances, tailored to the teams, and as in the case of that Willock situation. But I thought right at the end there, the Gallagher euphoria. It sounded very off the peg, didn't it? It's like,
well, and also lacking alliteration, surprisingly. Yeah. Maybe he thought he'd gone to the well too much.
The synonyms for euphoria.
I mean, glory jumps out. I know it means something slightly different, but...
Yeah, it needs more emotion, doesn't it? So
maybe.
Euphoria synonyms. Any beginning with G, glee. But glee's not enough, is it?
Gallagher glee.
I think that might work.
Gallagher glee. Gallagher glee. It works.
Yeah.
I'll let Drury know tonight at the FSA Awards. Right. Next up, a question from Josh Cork. Charlie, perhaps one for you, given your current life circumstances. He says, when a player is celebrating a goal by announcing their partner's pregnancy, why do they simultaneously mime pregnancy with the ball and suck their thumb? Are you the wife or baby? Always irks me. I never thought about this. Which one are you?
But I've thought this before as well. What do you? I think the birth of a baby. Is more an appropriate time.
We should factually address this. No players doing the sort of 12-week mark goal celebration. No. This is a post-birth situation, right?
Well, no, I think that has happened. There was one last season where I remember a player
like a size 4 ball for that. And go up in sizes as you go through the trimesters.
Yeah, each trimester.
It's complete bollocks. What about gender reveal goal celebration?
Yeah, you do.
I mean, that is something that will happen one day, won't it?
Harry Kane does gender reveal in the Amazon All or Nothing. Not during a game, it should be said. But I mean, there was one, because it was a player who
did it.
It's
a boy.
A beautiful baby boy.
Bouncing. Anyway, carry on.
A Blackburn boy. There was one where the player in question did it, and then like 6 months later was off after the birth. So, you know, you track it, and it was about, he was doing it at the time of the 12-week scan, which is, that's novel.
Yeah.
You know, it should be, you know, if you think of Bebeto, that was surely the birth of the child, not the reveal.
That's too much. Too many increments involved.
Yeah,
in that.
Come on.
But good spot, Josh. Something that really should be addressed. A curious weekend for the Premier League. This was essentially the World Cup send-off weekend, without really having the kind of lengthy month in between that we'd normally get. I took it upon myself, Dave, to draw up a definitive list of Premier League goal scorers who are celebrating their World Cup call-up / sending a message to national coach X after their World Cup snub at the weekend. Became a somewhat more precise science than I expected. So here, well, let's go through the list of Premier League goal scorers who were in and around the World Cup reckoning and decide whether they indeed fit either criteria. Ivan Toney, were either of his goals an act of sending a message or responding to his World Cup snub?
I think the scoring two at the Etihad to win the game is the general performance. If not, you know, the goals were sort of relatively run-of-the-mill, weren't they? But that performance is very much sending a message. And because he was the early game as well, he could have one eye on the fortunes of Callum Wilson later on, for example, if he gets injured.
And Charlie, it superseded the kind of circumstances which those goals were scored. It was a huge Premier League upset. You know, the narrative was right there in front of us. There was still talk of Ivan Toney in England. So I think it gets in there.
I'd go further. I'd say that's the perfect response to the snub. You know, it's not just any old response. That is the perfect way to respond.
The problem is, the ingredient that seems slightly dodgy here for me is, was it much of a snub? Was he really... I mean, obviously, at the top of the spectrum, you've got Gascoigne hotel room snubbing. And then right at the bottom, you've just got someone who's never really in the... Ruben Loftus-Cheek, for example. I mean, that's not a snub, is it? So where does Toney fit
in the
snub spectrum?
I'd say it's enough. Like, there was... Because he was... I'd say, yeah, he was being talked about. When the squad came out, he would have been on the list of...
I'd take him.
XYZ picked as ABC miss out. Yeah. He would have been in the ABC,
well,
I think.
He is good at penalties.
Great at penalties.
As we must remind everyone.
Also, his celebration very much spoke to the idea that he thought it was a snub, you know, because it was the kind, you know, wasn't it the sort of fingers in the ears, I think, and this sort of thing.
Right. But I don't think it could really counts as a snub because I think he's only ever been in one squad. He didn't get on the pitch when he was in said squad, and for one game didn't even make the bench. It was a long shot at best. It's not really a snub.
I mean, I do like the idea of describing as the most run-of-the-mill England player as a bit, you know, as if it were a snub. You know, you talk there about Loftus-Cheek, but going, you know, how far down the list you go. But you know, something like Aaron Creswell responds to World Cup snub by setting up West Ham goal.
You wouldn't rule out the use of that word. I mean, it does get thrown around willy-nilly. But there's still a small chance that Tony ends up in Qatar. You never know. England can replace anybody in their squad through injury right up until the eve of the game, I think. So still a chance, but we'll see. Phil Foden, is that a celebration of being selected? I think it is, because he's young enough for it not to be like a given in his life. He's not seen it all and done it before. Dave, I think this is a celebrating his World Cup call-up. He was a shoe-in, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was such a shoe-in that, I don't know, it might be something that a commentator could sort of reach for it, just as a bit of a sort of slightly newsworthy, relevant sort of line. But I don't think it really makes sense.
So, but Charlie, how much does definitely being in the squad anyway contribute to this? Because I think, if it's just a throwaway thing, and he celebrated his World Cup call-up by scoring the equaliser at the Etihad.
Yeah, it jars a bit. I think if you were to do that, you'd have to say something like, not a bad week for the 21-year-old. He scores here and gets his first call-up to the World Cup squad. I think you'd have to be...
Fine.
It would have to be more jaunty. I think, the spirit of celebrate school up would be more for your Madisons, your Ben Whites, your borderlines.
Okay, let's keep the bar high then.
But this does highlight how unprecedented this situation is, because literally we would never have had this before, right? Because when would a normal World Cup squad be announced? Well, immediately after the last game of the season.
That's true.
You could have had like maybe someone like a Michael Ricketts could have celebrated his England call up after he scored a goal. Yeah, mid season ahead of an international break. But like you've never had a World Cup to celebrate on the pitch before in that
that's
way.
True. Yeah. That's why it made for such a fascinating day of study. Kiefer Moore. Yeah, Kiefer Moore, Charlie. I'm guessing you're not having this because again, he's a mainstay of the Welsh squad. Probably in the starting lineup too.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the pure celebrated his call up. If you're going to be that concise, then I think it does have to be more. It was a surprise. There was cause for celebration. You know, like on the extreme, Harry Kane. He's not going to have been. Obviously, that's like taking it to the nth degree. He's not going to have been like fretting, waiting for the call.
We can take Harry Kane out of our list. Is that safe to say? Roberto Firmino, who wasn't selected by Brazil, Dave, scoring for Liverpool against Southampton. Is that response? I mean, maybe we don't need to use the word snub here, but responding to not being in the squad, showing that manager what he's all about. That counts.
I think so. But how long has he been out of the picture?
Don't know.
No, Firmino's perfect. He was like the last man out, and Martinelli sort of came out of nowhere, but he was the one people were surprised got in. Firmino was the one who's dropped out, so that would be a perfect one, I think. You know, he's the perfect response to being dropped.
Okay, I think on the basis of our logic so far, we can rule out Darwin Núñez. 2 goals for Liverpool against Southampton. Harry Kane, of course. Ben Davies, I mean, 74 caps. He's not celebrating a call-up, is he? Rodrigo Bentancur, again, a solid option for Uruguay, so it's no issue. James Madison, though.
Stonewall, he's the epitome of this.
He really is. He really went off,
didn't he, with an injury?
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I tweeted, and you might have other suggestions. I thought that was the most who else but goal of the season so far. I mean, that was such a who else but. He's both in form and there's a great narrative subplot.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think the goal scoring aspect. Oh, yeah, no, fair play. Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. If anything, too well. Alexis McAllister for Brighton and Argentina. That's a good one, isn't it? He's essentially the Madison figure. In a kind of stature. So I'll take that. Danny Ings not being in England squad but scoring twice for Aston Villa. I'm not sure.
Not sure.
No. He's gone, right? He's out of the picture.
Yeah.
Christian Eriksen for Denmark. Again, I mean, no.
No.
Dan James.
I think he's too established.
Yeah. And the only name left is Alejandro Garnacho, who wasn't in the Argentina squad, but he's clearly too young to be sending out any sort of message to the top brass.
He's in the World Cup's just come a little bit too soon for him. Listen, he'll have plenty more to cut, just a little bit too soon.
I love a little bit too soon. Excellent. Really love it. Anyway, we're not off to Qatar. We've been snubbed by the Athletic squad selectors. But we are off to Manchester, of course. That's tonight at New Century Hall, if you're listening promptly enough. And Dublin's Liberty Hall Theatre on Wednesday night. If you want to join us, you've still got time. Just go to myticket.co.uk or just Google Football Clichés Live and join the hordes of other Football Clichés fans for our delicately prepared show. I'm really happy with the running order now, Dave. I was scared about it pre-London. And now I think we've got the best cross-section of the Football Clichés experience possible.
Well, yeah, I think the people of Manchester and Dublin and the surrounding areas are in for a treat. We've basically had a dress rehearsal.
Not that we approached it in that way.
Slightly insulting to to our core fan base, but still. We are
Speak to our lack of professionalism in the fact that we didn't have an actual dress rehearsal before the first show, but yes. Yeah.
But no nerves here. We're going straight in and we're going to be great.
Hello there. This upcoming World Cup, what are the Athletic going to be doing about it? Well, I'm James Richardson, and every night I'll be hosting a Totally Football show with the likes of Raphael Honigstein, James Horncastle, and the rest of the Totally crew. Then every morning from Qatar, wham, the Athletic Football Podcast will be at you with David Ornstein, Matt Slater, Adam Crafton, and many more. There'll also be World Cup content from Adam Hurry's Football Clichés Podcast, Michael Cox's insightful Athletic Football Tactics Podcast, and Joe Devine's TIFO Podcast, with all the stories that matter from Qatar. All in all, The Athletic is your essential audio companion for the upcoming World Cup.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Right, welcome back to Football Clichés Now. Question from Emma Levin. Charlie says, following the World Cup squad announcements where every country seems to take a different approach, can we have a ruling on whether wingers should fit in the midfielders or forward section of the graphic?
Like this.
It's very troubling.
Yeah, I like this.
It brings out the proper football madness in me. I mean, I've never been a huge follower of the kind of proportions you should have in different areas of the squad position-wise, but the 4-3-3 era and everything that's come after it has really complicated this.
I love this question, and it's one of those where we're just so in sync with our listeners, because this is exactly what I thought when I was... Someone kept DMing me all the squads. I don't really know why I did it, but it was really handy. So thanks for doing that. I assume he was doing it to many people, but it was great. But so I kept seeing these. Obviously no consistency across the board. And yeah, a lot of... And you're like, why is this being done? A team's doing it because they want to have an even spread, so they feel they should, like, you know, they don't want... Maybe, you know, they don't want to send out a message that their squad is top heavy or something like that. But lots of, you know, like Mason Mount, and I think I've seen him described differently in lots of different...
He's
graphics. More midfielder-y than forward-y, though, surely.
He wouldn't... The thing, I suppose the distinction is, he wouldn't play either side of Harry Kane, would he? He would always be a number 8 sort of type, wouldn't he?
I think in Southgate's view, he has played as a kind of front three before.
In my mind, growing up, looking at all the squad announcements for the tournaments and the discourse around it, it was always, do you take 4 or 5 strikers?
Yes. I mean, clearly it doesn't apply anymore, but that is the absolutely traditional old school dilemma. 4 or 5. You're so right. But yeah, they were centre forwards, basically, or maybe the odd support striker. But this is kind of an FPL style dilemma. I mean, you know, Salah was a midfielder in FPL last year. This year, maybe?
Never been a forward. I mean, but then Rashford was a midfielder is a midfielder.
It's just complete rubbish. It's complete rubbish. They know what they're doing. Maybe, Charlie, Belgium's approach is the way to do it. They simply graphically represented every player all in one big chunk, but in a rough order of attackingness. So they started off with the goalkeeper and ended with Lukaku. Right. So that's the way to do it, right?
That is, can you imagine the disagreements? Like, well, they probably didn't care as much, but if we were doing that, how much? But like, no,
he's more adventurous and forward thinking than me.
South Korea did like a sort of Mark Carey-esque data analysis depth chart.
Oh, right.
So with the actual formation and the players in the order.
Establishing a hierarchy of players.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, that's not sure that will do for squad harmony. Not known for their infighting, but we'll see how that goes. Harking back to last week's episode where we bemoaned Graham Potter's use of the phrase huffing and puffing Charlie. Total Vertball writes in and wants us to expand on this point. He says, what constitutes a huffing and puffing in respect to trying to attack the opposition to no avail? I'm going to go with sideways passing.
Sterile domination.
Yeah.
A very bad ratio of possession to chances created. I think huffing and puffing, there's a definite implication there that you haven't even really created much.
Yeah.
You know, because if you had, you'd describe that in a different way. You know, it wasn't our day or et cetera, et cetera. Huffing and puffing is just is not really getting anywhere.
I think we're halfway there, Dave. I mean, obviously you have to be the team in control of the agenda. Like, you have the ball, you're just not doing very much with it. Is there a physical aspect to huffing and puffing? I feel like there has to be sort of lots of energy, lots of flusteredness going into it. Sort of need to chill out a bit. Is that where huffing and puffing implies?
A sort of inefficient sort of usage of energy, perhaps. Sort of running around but not getting a lot done, really. Yeah. But also, like, the huffing and puff. If you were to sort of huff and puff in, say, like, an office situation, that would be like sort of being a bit petulant and
kicking
a bit
up a
sort
fuss.
Of moaning and he's sort of huffing and puffing again, not getting his own way. But in this sense, it's more of described as we did our best, we tried, but today it just wasn't. Our best wasn't good enough. We didn't really get going.
Charlie, who are historically the most huffy and puffy team you can think of? I'm thinking England in pretty much any tournament game where they've been forced to kind of chase it.
Well, also because we've always been described, you know, we've wilted in the summer heat and all of that. So I think that's kind of linked as well. You know, lots of huffing and puffing, but just, you know,
is it hot enough in Qatar to wilt? Because I hear a lot about the heat or the more temperate climate over there in the winter. I haven't actually checked the temperatures. What are the temperatures in Doha? Is it wiltable?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
I don't think it is.
It is.
Maybe
today,
it's the humidity.
In Doha today, it is 31 degrees.
Oh
yeah.
Anything above 28 is wilt.
Humidity of 51%.
It's interesting on which teams. I mean, yes, sometimes they created a lot, but Graham Potter's Brighton, I think, sometimes were quite huffy and puffy.
Oh, right.
They I do think an important bit for the huffing and puffing. Brighton, a team like Brighton, they're a bit too tidy and neat to be huffing. Huffing and puffing is like there's a little bit of a raggedness to it,
chasing balls down cul-de-sacs is very huffy and puffy. So, basically running the ball into brick walls. I kind of agree. If you're too tidy a team that's still not getting anywhere, that's not huffing and puffing. That is looking a bit blunt, perhaps. You know,
lacking a cutting.
Exactly. I think that's different. I think that's definitely different. I think there has to be an element of basically we've run out of ideas here.
Yes.
We are. Yeah. Okay. On a similar note, the kind of grey area between what counts as controlling a game and then really breaking through. This is very interesting from Henry. Here's a clip from Liverpool versus Southampton. Here's Alisson keeping the Saints at bay in the latter stages of Liverpool's 3-1 win at Anfield.
Whizzed over towards Adams. What a save that is. A stunning stop from Alisson. He has kept Southampton quiet at times today.
Henry asks, Charlie, the commentator says Alisson has been keeping Southampton quiet with his saves in the game. Surely a goalkeeper can't keep a team quiet because the act of them getting shots off is being noisy in the first place. Bang on!
Yeah, that is spot on. I've never heard a goalkeeper keeping. He really kept them quiet. Yeah, that's a centre back's job or a defensive midfielder or someone. And often talks about an individual player as well as a team. You know, he's really kept Salah quiet today.
Alisson really had Jay Adams in
Jay
his
Adams
back pocket
in his back
today.
Pocket.
Oh God, that would really be problematic. I wouldn't accept that one.
Just marked him out of the game.
But a goalkeeper can keep a team at bay, right?
Yes,
keep them at bay.
Yeah, because they're the last line of defence.
Absolutely fine. But yeah, just the sort of subtlety we were after. Thank you, Henry. That was really, really good. Right. Love this question from Andrew Howe-Ely, fast becoming a premium contributor to the Football Clichés podcast. He asks, Dave, does any current Premier League player have as much future interim manager energy as Adam Lallana? It's a good shout, but I think we can do better.
But he's done it already, hasn't he?
Is Cody too obvious a choice?
But hasn't Lallana already done it?
Oh, I think he has.
I think he was involved when between Potter and De Zerbi. He was interim. You know, he was. I don't think it was just him.
He was just caretaker. He was part of a caretaker team, and that doesn't count as interim manager. So he needs like a lengthy spell in charge to the point where he might get asked if he wants the job full time. So it's an extended period. Defined.
But he's definitely shown his credentials already.
Interesting on this one, Dave. Like, if you'd asked me this exact question maybe two seasons ago, I said, no, Adam Lallana's too attacking midfieldery for a start, too spindly, not enough physical presence to be a leadership figure in that sense, even in an interim sense. But it's all gone out the window the last couple of years. Anyone can be interim, anyone can be caretakers these days.
Well, look at Gary O'Neill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a scrappy midfielder. I mean, he's got an engine. Yeah. So it kind of counts. But
I suppose so. But,
but yeah, I feel like Cody's too obvious a choice.
Cody is a good shout. I mean, if you're a player and you're already going on Monday Night Football, as Cody has,
yeah,
and you're already sort of talking earnestly about football, then it's not much of a leap to imagine them sort of performing that kind of role.
The fronting up sort of interview we've already basically already heard it on today's episode. You imagine that first, we've not been good enough.
But he would say exactly the same things, but just transpose that to, look, I'm the manager, that's on me. You know, that sort of thing, rather than as he's doing currently, which is, no, it's on the players.
I'll do this job for as long as I'm asked to.
Yeah, and, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not looking any further forward than that. But yeah, Adam Alana is something of a good shout, despite Charlie Spanner in the works there. Interesting one from Matthew Arnold. I want to ask a question first. It says, how many ways do you think there are of saying a team is top of the league table at Christmas?
There are a couple that leap out. Mm-hmm. Top of the tree, Christmas number one.
Good. Leading the way, going into the festive period. I mean, Christmas has an awful lot of second mentions available to it, of course. Over in Germany, they formalise it with Herbstmeisterschaft, which is autumn champions. So that's a thing. You can be the halfway champions, essentially, in Germany. But of all the kind of vague ways that you can mix up the variables of being top of the league and Christmas time, I never really considered this. From Jonathan Pearce.
10 of the last 13 sides top on Christmas Day have got on to win the title, but not since 1948 have Arsenal managed to hold on to the Yuletide supremacy and take that crown.
Yuletide supremacy is going straight to DVD.
Very good.
That's so good job, because the clip there is right from before the game's even started. So it's not like that is a second mention. That is the first mention.
Yuletide supremacy.
It's like, yeah, the battle for Yuletide supremacy moves over to Molineux.
That's very Premier League, isn't it? Yuletide supremacy, I love it. I think it's got wonderful poise to it, Dave. And it doesn't feel like a digging for second mentions either. It feels like he had real confidence behind it.
Oh, yeah, all for it. Really good.
Fantastic. Right, well, that leaves only one thing for today's adjudication panel, and that is Keys and Grey Corner. Sunday. Right, before we get stuck into the audio delights of Keys and Grey this week, a surprisingly rare venture for us, Charlie, into the Richard Keys blog, which was hot off the press before we started recording today. Only one real item on the agenda, and that was Cristiano Ronaldo's explosive interview with Piers Morgan. This is a stunning passage, and so Keysy as well. Here we go. Rarely have I read such self-centred, self-pitying tripe. Who on earth is advising Cristiano Ronaldo these days? Perhaps nobody, which is why he stumbles from one tantrum to the next PR disaster almost daily. Before I go any further, in case this blog somehow finds its way to him, I respect you, Ronnie. I respect what you've achieved in football. I respect you've been the greatest player of your generation, proving what a talent you are in four different countries, ripping up record books as you went. Amazing. In case this blog somehow finds you.
Well, we found out last week, or whatever it was, that Cristiano Ronaldo does write in angrily to Transfermarkt. So maybe that's the next step, is richardjkeys.com. This was such a good blog by Keysy. But what I loved about it was just how much contradiction there is in this. So keen is he to sort of belittle Ronaldo, he even almost defends Ralf Rangnick.
Yes.
And the man he dubbed Eric 10 Months. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. You know, there's sort of the vault fast. And I love as well, there's a bit in it, he basically says how Piers Morgan shouldn't have done this because Piers Morgan is a mate of Cristiano's. Yeah. And Keysy explains that, you know, I've got plenty of mates and I'd never hang them out to dry. Essentially just showing how much his sort of integrity goes out the window if it means like doing a favour for Brucey or Daishi, but sort of presenting that as like a sort of a really good attribute that he has.
He goes really hard, Dave, on sort of how to be political and diplomatic with your pals in the media. And if there's one line that could be taken out of context quite comfortably and just enjoyed in isolation, it's simply the words, "I've never fried a mate."
Amazing.
It's like he's being interrogated for a crime. So I'm not going to give you names. I've never fried a mate, and I'm not going to start now.
I've never fried a mate. Never. Where would I? A mate. Where would Keyes have heard that term? Like, he must have heard that from one of his proper football men mates.
He's exactly.
You can imagine me, like, I remember Daichi's rule number one, never fry anyone in this game. It'll come back to bite you.
Great stuff.
I would recommend to anyone reading this in full. I mean, it's another example. I've said this many times, but whenever now a big thing happens, one of my first instincts is I can't wait to get Keyes's read on it. And this was one of those.
It kind of helps me get my perspective on it, to be honest.
Yes, it does, yeah.
He's bashed that out. A good 1,000 words in not very much time, I have to say. I mean, after brunch and then straight into it. Anyway, that was all just a preamble. Here, in its now traditional slot, is the latest Keyes and Gray pod, condensed into 100 seconds.
My name is Richard Keyes.
And my name is Andrew Gray.
And what a treat you're in for. But I did that in Singapore. Fuck all dropped my way. In fact, Gareth Southgate has named his squad for the World Cup. Brazil. if you look into the minutiae, Maradona, Argies, we win that, we win the tournament. Waddle's penalty, maybe. Semi-final, we maybe. Win that, we win but the tournament. Euros. I don't want to hear football's like, coming home.
Oh, you'll hear it all right.
I do not
don't
want
you
to hear that,
that
song at any point during
the tournament.
I'll
tell you when tournament. It starts.
It is so antagonistic to people that live and work abroad and teams that don't understand.
You'll
that.
Hear it.
I've always said this, it's been a terrific song for those at home to
get behind.
Enjoy, get behind, understand the irony of the words. But, but abroad, outside of the borders of the UK, people don't do irony. They just see it as a...
Arrogant.
No. Bury it, please. Don't play it. Enough. Aston Villa paid Rangers 4.25 mil in compo.
After I said to Geraldine, my wife, I said, what do you think of that? There's like Thomas Hardy. She thinks it's more like Oliver Hardy. So,
so, very good. Very good, Geraldine. Lovely.
anyway, son, you and I are going to fall out. And I stupidly said to him, well, why is that? And he said, because you haven't had a kick. And I said, well, it's down the left-hand side the whole time. And he said, so it should be, son. He's a genius. And,
But all right.
We'll leave you, Martin. We've taken up too much time already.
Martin, up you go.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for filling our diary commitment. And
thank you, Ben.
We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Martin.
Oh, dear. In between all of that mess, Martin O'Neill telling the two most textbook Martin O'Neill-y stories to Keyes and Gray. I stumbled across something of a dilemma that I should have had before, Charlie, which is, would Richard Keyes be in favour of singing Three Lions? And it would have been on a right knife edge for me, so I'm glad to have that clarified.
I think I would have said no, because I think it's too... Because his thing now as well is how he's tried to... Because he's an exile, he's tried to present himself as a kind of, it's not that I'm anti-England. I'm looking out for the other, you know, everyone else in the world. That joke... of, not more like someone with the same surname could not be more in their wheelhouse. I'm not sure there's a joke more guaranteed, more sort of a style of joke more guaranteed to make them guffaw than that.
Of it and it's, everything.
It's just so perfect.
It's wonderful. Dave, thanks for joining the adjudication panel today. See you at the awards tonight.
Thank you.
Good luck to us. Doesn't really work now in retrospect. Charlie, let's bring our A game to Manchester and Dublin, shall we?
Absolutely.
If we win... I will record a voice note after we win and I'll edit it back in before the morning.
Good to see Dave, king of 2 a.m. voice notes, I can confirm. Thanks for everyone for listening. We'll be back on Thursday with the Pure World Cup 11. See you then.
The Athletic.